Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Doing things a little different tonight, and we'll see how it goes. We've got kind of a guest audience here going, so it's kind of interesting. But what we've got going here is we'll see what we can go with the regular show as much as we can. Anyway, all right, getting to it here. Starting as usual with the political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, my opponent is palling around with angry chefs, backroom dealmakers, and Halliburton board members. That's always a good time. So getting to it here, still kind of on the lighter side, but maybe not. One of the things that frustrates me is daylight savings time, and I think we've gone over this 2 years in a row now, and we're still dealing with daylight savings time, and I still hate it with an all-consuming passion. So it is what it is, and I don't know. There's a number of studies now that have been done to actually explain how many people die as a result of daylight savings time due to the jumping ahead part, the springing ahead. You know, at this point, we actually do daylight saving time for almost 9 months. I think it's 3.5 months now that we do daylight saving time, which is mid-November through the beginning of March. So why don't we just spring the last 3.5 months ahead? Or alternately, if we're going to call it daylight something, you know, change the name, since daylight saving time is the bulk, I think that should be regular time, and let's rename winter to daylight wasting time, because that, I don't know, it seems like a better way to go. But I cannot stand daylight saving time, and it drives me crazy as one who does have at times insomnia problems. Screwing with the clocks is a really good way to mess with people who have any sort of sleeping problem ever. But, let's see here. Basically, this study shows that abolishing daylight saving time would save 171 American pedestrians per year, as well as 195 Americans that are killed in car wrecks, specific to the shift in daylight saving time. So basically we're killing 366 people a year to jump the clocks ahead in an hour for 9 months of the year, which why don't we just go ahead and do the last three, save 360-some people, and the sanity of insomniacs everywhere. Moving on, because I don't want to get stuck on daylight saving time too long, because I will spend the whole hour complaining about it if I don't move on. It's interesting. I believe this is our 2-year anniversary on the show. We've been doing this since 2012, and it was early 2012. I think it was March 4th was the first show. And the only reason I really caught this is that there's an article going around on the internet that was written up on the Northern Kentucky Tea Party's website about the whole Red Star incident. Those of you who have been with the show for the entire length, remember, we used to run Red Star updates for, the first 6 months of the show or better, and I think the theme music's still queued up in there, although I never did feel like playing that. Something about the Nazi anthem doesn't seem right to play ever. But the point is that the Red Star stuff, it has come back up again, and there's been some folks pushing and trying to reignite the fire, if you will, of everything that was behind that. And it is kind of interesting to go back in time, especially since a lot of that revolved around me. I still, to this day, claim I was a scapegoat, that it really did not have a lot to do with me. You can go out, you can do the math for yourself. I've got the math to prove I didn't cause anybody to lose anything, whatever, out of my treasurer's rates in 2011. At the end of the day, is anybody worse off for it? No, not really. So it doesn't matter anyway. But it was definitely interesting. There's a big, long article on the Northern Kentucky Tea Party's website. If you are so inclined, you can search for that, nkyteaparty.org. is the website, and the story headline is Remember the Red Star Incident at the Ballot Box, and it goes through a lot of what was out there. There's even more information out there about what was going on that isn't even in this, and this is a ton. I mean, this is a really long story, so I certainly you know, encourage you to keep everything in mind, not just this incident, but, you know, there's lots of reasons to vote for or against people, and I always encourage people to do the right thing. But I guess the point is that from the Republican Party perspective and what they were doing, you know, there were a lot of Tea Partiers and a lot of people in Campbell County and in Jefferson County where the Red Stars really came out that they had signed a petition. And, in fact, some of the Republicans there said that they specifically weren't going to vote for me, but they believed I had the right to be on the ballot because the process is unfair. Democrats and Republicans only need two signatures to run for any office. Libertarians need a minimum of 5,000 signatures. Now, you'll hear Democrats and Republicans say, well, yeah, but you guys don't have a primary. Well, actually, we do. And then they'll say, well, you know, you guys, that's your version of a primary. If you can get enough signatures, then you're valid, you're legit. Well, I can tell you that there are not so legitimate Democrats and Republicans that get into office because of the fact that it only takes two signatures to get on the ballot. So my opinion, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and you should equalize the entire process. And I think 5,000 signatures is too many, and I think two signatures is probably too few. But I think that somewhere in the middle and a lot closer to the bottom end is fair. But I think the real motivation behind all that, I think I was really just a scapegoat. I think the real motivation was that there is a power shift going on specifically within the Republican Party at the time. And there were a lot of people who feared this power shift that was going on. You can go back to 2010 when Rand Paul ran for Senate. You know, the establishment powers really didn't think Rand Paul stood a chance. And all the news outlets said it was going to be Trey Grayson versus Jack Conway. And it was quite a interesting shock to the media when Rand Paul skyrocketed through the polls and ended up winning the Republican primary. And I think that worried a lot of the establishment types that, you know, their little fiefdoms or whatever were going to be torn down. So what's interesting, a number of stories have come out here in the last week or so about the Republican establishment moving in to not just, you know, win the primaries out there, but also, and they're using the word crushing the Tea Party. You know, in 2000, the rationale given behind it is that candidates in 2010 and 2012, there were Republican Tea Party-ish candidates that ran against incumbent Republicans and won those primaries and then went on to lose the general election. Now, that said, a big part of it, I think, is number one thing we saw was that when a Tea Party-ish or Tea Party-labeled candidate won a primary, the establishment completely and totally backed off their support. And, in fact, that was not very different than what happened in 2013 in the Virginia governor's race. We've talked about that extensively. I don't want to rehash that entirely, but basically the establishment abandoned the candidate and left them with no money for the last month or two of that race, which is fairly significant. So there is a war. The Republicans do not want the Tea Party in their ranks, or I should say they don't want them in leadership or running for office. They're more than happy to get your vote. Heck, you know, understand, as the chair of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, I would love to have your vote on every one of our candidates no matter what. But I also understand that is earned, that it's earned by candidates. That, especially in our case, we don't have the gaggles of voters that blindly go in and just hit the easy button, vote straight ticket, whatever, and walk out. That we have to earn those votes. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I wish that the major party candidates had to do the same thing. I wish that they had to actually earn all of those votes rather than having all those people just walk in and press the easy button. I've long been an advocate for getting rid of the straight ticket button entirely. We're not supposed to be voting for parties. We're supposed to be voting for candidates. And there's a long history about why the straight party ticket button exists and how straight party, that whole thing, even started. Ironically, the whole process is built around something that's totally illegal now. It was considered electioneering now. The idea behind it was that a long time ago, when you went to the polls, there'd be a representative from one or more parties, usually more, outside the polling place, and they'd give you a piece of paper, and they'd say, here, vote our ticket. And back then, the voting booth was just a box, and you just put your votes in there. And everybody went into the same box. So when they gave you a ticket, the straight ticket, right, was the ticket, the piece of paper that the party gave you and said, here, take this. And it would usually be a different colored paper so that it was notable what party it was. The term splitting the ticket was when you said, you know what, I like this, but I'm going to take and tear that person out. And they would tear or split the ticket, and that's where that term comes from as well. So the point is that at one time it was still a voter's choice thing, and it was still physical paper involved. All that stuff's illegal now. You can't have somebody handing out election materials at the polling place. You can't have electioneering at the polling place. And so it's kind of interesting we still have the straight party ticket mechanism, even though everything it's based on is illegal now. But the point is, and getting back to the point here, the Republican Party is going through a shift, and we've talked about this before. It's going to be very interesting to see where they go. There are some forces that are very much trying to move it in a socially conservative way, a hard social conservative way. And there's been a lot of groups that are now named Tea Parties that were not tea in the original sense of tea. You know, tea originally stood for taxed enough already. There are a number of Tea Party groups out there that taxes are the least of their concerns. And additionally, you have the establishment types that certainly are looking to maintain their power and control over the party, over their party. And in many ways, they have legitimate beefs. They say, well, you know, we've been here, we've been paying our dues, we've been doing our thing for all these years. And I understand why they would say that, but, you know, again, as chair of the Libertarian Party here in Kentucky, you know, a party is made up of who shows up. A party is made up of who your activists are, who your voices are in the party. And certainly it is difficult to impress upon people sometimes why certain things are important or why certain policies are important. But at the end of the day, a party is made up of its members. And I think that this is a very bad move. If you work to specifically squelch, and it's one thing to just, you know, go out and have a better message or a better campaign. It's another thing entirely to go out and specifically target the Tea Party and say, we don't want you around anymore. We're going to squash all of your candidates. It's a very good way to alienate that base. And let's face it, there's really not a more energized base in the Republican Party other than the Tea Party folks that align with the Republican Party. If you remove them from the equation, what does the Republican Party have? I mean, really, what do they have? I don't think they really have much. And it's funny because there's a poll online here, and actually let me refresh it just so I have the latest numbers. But just a, you know, just a regular old open poll, internet poll, nothing official, obviously. But it's a list of Republicans. Who's your current Republican pick for 2016? And at this point, Rand Paul is leading the pack with 31%. Ted Cruz is in second place with 28%. In third place is someone else not listed on this list. And of the others on this list that are losing to someone else, you have Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, Mike Huckabee. Please, dear Lord, don't pick Mike Huckabee. He's horrible. Bobby Jindal, Sarah Palin, Rick Perry, Paul Ryan, Rick Santorum taking the rear position, which, but it's funny, with 1%. And he's even losing to Donald Trump. Donald Trump's got 2%. The point is that the only people who have a solid base behind them are considered Tea Party people. The Rand Pauls, your Ted Cruzes, these are considered Tea Party types in Congress. And if you're trying to kick those people out of the party, what are you going to have left? Who are your energized people? I mean, just setting yourselves up for another failure, another electoral failure. I mean, if you're going to put up another Romney, Republicans, if you put up another Romney, I don't know who the Democrats will put up, but even as bad as Obama has been, if you put up another Romney or another McCain, it's you're going to lose. You'll keep losing. That's a sure recipe for loss, is your McCain and Dole and Romney types, all from the establishment wing of the party, and all of them have lost because they have nothing in common with the American public. Speaking of voting and stuff, I found a story here I thought was pretty interesting. There's a super PAC raising $10 million for Secretary of States that are strict on voting. And I think that's actually probably a good thing. I know some of my liberal friends are very much on this bandwagon against having to show voter ID or ID when you go to vote. And I'm sorry, I actually am 100% for it. I do understand the concern about the poll tax concerns, which is why I think if you're going to go that route, you do have to provide the ID for free. But and I would add that, you know, that's some fiscal conservatives might complain about giving the ID away for free. But listen, there's costs involved in our entire system. Our whole electing people costs money. Kentucky spends $7 million every time we run a primary that I can't even participate in. But having our form of government costs money. So let's ignore the fact that the IDs will cost money, whatever. I mean, how often do you have to get an ID anyway? But that showing ID is a good thing at the polls. And I'd be very interested to see how this super PAC turns out. We'll be definitely following that because I just really, you know, I think while the criticism is that voter fraud is rare, just because something is rare doesn't mean it shouldn't be stopped. You know, technically speaking, murder is rare. Doesn't mean we should just say, you know what, it's not worth enforcing murder. It's so rare. The point is that the electoral process has to have as much integrity as possible. And if there's even a shadow of a doubt, that it doesn't have that integrity, then you end up with, I mean, oh my gosh, how many years did we deal with? I mean, I still hear these things about Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida in 2012. And yeah, there were some people in Ohio that legitimately broke the law and committed voter fraud. We know that. We know that. The Florida stuff, we know what happened there. That was, and if you missed that show, there were two ballots, and they counted each ballot. There were so many things on the ballot that they had two separate ballots. And they counted each voter casting two ballots as two votes, right? So each person generated two votes or voted twice, but they didn't really. I mean, it was two separate ballots. And so that's how you end up with 141% voting, is that really it was 70.5% voting on each ballot. But, you know, the point is that if you don't keep the process to the highest level of integrity, you're never going to have people accept the results. And so I don't think that having people have to have ID to vote is a bad thing. I don't think that that's really that big of a burden. And especially if you set it up that it's a free ID and whatever, it's not a huge burden at that point. And I think that that gives people faith and confidence in the process. And I think that's more important than anything. You know, the faith and confidence thing is actually becoming more and more of a issue. I've got a poll here from Pew Research about millennials. Millennials do not trust pretty much anybody. the study shows that millennials have emerged into adulthood with a low levels of social trust. And when asked, generally speaking, would you say that most people can be trusted or that you can't be too careful in dealing with people? Only 19% of millennials say that most people can be trusted. And that's down 31% of Gen X, 37% of the silent generation, and 40% of boomers all say that generally you can trust people. And what's interesting is that's even down, all those numbers are down from 1987. In 1987, 49% of the silent generation said you could generally trust people, 42% of boomers, 36% of Gen X. So trust is going down in general. People aren't as trusting as they used to be. Maybe for good reason. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have happened. Certainly our politicians make lots of promises that they fail to come through with over and over and over and over. But, there's a big, longer discussion about some of it, too. I think the growing welfare state makes people cold and jaded and not want to actually, you know, engage in true charity being things that you actually do give willingly and freely because you want to. And I think that's part of it as well. But the point is that people are less trusting than they used to be. And if you're going to have trust in our electoral process, critical as our electoral process, then you're going to have to take the extra steps to make it so it's virtually impossible to defraud the system, to instill trust in that system. And make no mistake, that elections are important. They're important for lots of reasons. Not only do we choose our leaders, but it really speaks to the legitimacy of government. Because if people don't trust the electoral process, then they don't trust how or why people were elected. If they don't trust how or why people are elected, then they get the mindset that the government's illegitimate. That's kind of a big deal. So I guess the point is that the Secretary of State thing, having to show ID at the polls, I really don't have a problem with it. I think it's a good thing as long as you give the IDs away for free and you don't make the process ridiculous or onerous. I mean, obviously nobody's trying – well, okay, some people are trying to keep certain people away from the polls, but I'm not trying to keep certain people away from the polls. I'm just honestly worried about the integrity of the process. And just because it's rare doesn't mean that you just ignore it and say, ah, it's rare enough, who cares? So, I don't know. That's kind of my take on it. I think that keeping the process clean is a good thing. Oh, let's see here. Boy, I got a handful of stories here. Let me get a couple of miscellaneous in before the break here. I read an interesting story online about the real story of the woman who was burned by McDonald's hot coffee. And I'm sure everybody remembers. I mean, it's become almost an urban legend almost as far as the woman who was burned by hot coffee and sued. And essentially what it turned out is that, of course, the headline was very sensational. And having been one in the media myself, I understand that the headline gets taken from the headlines aren't even written by the story writers generally. And then another news agency picks up the headline and modifies it to their, you know, liking or whatever to make it quote unquote original to them. And it keeps getting modified and modified until it breaks down into woman got burned by McDonald's and coffee because she put it in her lap and then squeezed her, you know, whatever. And that wasn't what happened. And there were some things, and it was very interesting. You know, McDonald's was keeping their coffee hotter than most people would keep their coffee in general, and hotter than your home coffee maker can make coffee. There were a number of things that were involved in this. It was very, very interesting. And basically, originally, they were not going for the ridiculous settlement. They weren't going for the large amount. What they wanted was McDonald's to cool off their coffee, to cool it down, because this woman received third-degree burns on her thighs. And so all they asked for was help with paying for the third-degree burns, the treatment of those, and to cool down the coffee. And McDonald's refused. And so that's how it then, you know, spun up and became a bigger and bigger thing. And, you know, becoming a bigger thing turned into a major lawsuit. And anyway, it was just kind of an interesting thing. And having been in the media myself, and since we were just talking about trust, one of the things you have to be very careful about is not just reading the headlines, because the headlines, again, usually aren't even written by the people who wrote the story, especially in the news, in print media. There's an editor somewhere that wrote that headline based on their take on the story. So basically, if you give an interview to a reporter, there's going to be the reporter's spin is going to be on that story. Right? I mean, does that make sense? If I'm interviewing somebody, I'm going to write what I took away from it. Well, I'm seeing things through the prism of my own bias. Well, then the editor reads the story, and they then read it through the prism of their own bias. And so basically, all of a sudden, what started out as nothing turns into some headline that's sensational and not really speaking directly to what was going on. And It's kind of funny, because what this has caused is a lot of people to complain about the media in general. And I'll tell you, I'm one of them. I complain about the media not reporting accurately. But it goes a little further, and it's kind of funny. I mean, really what it comes down to, folks, is we have to study for ourselves the issues and learn for ourselves. Don't take people's word for it. Again, we're not trusting as we used to be. Well, don't trust the media either. But there's a rep in Michigan that is threatening to try to get FCC licenses pulled for television stations that are running an Obamacare ad. And essentially, there are, you know, the Republicans are using Obamacare as a hammer on the Democrats that voted to pass it. And even those that didn't vote to pass it, but would support it. And so that issue is, you're going to see more of this year, I guarantee that. But basically, the ad has a woman who is suffering from leukemia, and she is saying that her health insurance was dropped and that she is now has to worry about getting insurance coverage as a result of Obamacare. And that's what the ad's about. It's funded by the Americans for Prosperity, which is a right-leaning group. And basically, this sitting Democratic congressman is threatening to pull the FCC license of any station that runs the ad, saying that the ad is misleading or false. Now, I have complaints about the media, but only a congressperson would try to then turn around and pull an FCC license from a station that was running a paid advertisement. It's not like they're reporting it as news. It's a paid advertisement that says it's paid for. I'm sure at the end it says paid for by such and such, because legally it has to. Just, I don't know. It's funny. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to take a break here. When we come back, we've got more. We've got some Obamacare stuff, got all kinds of stuff queued up. We'll see what we can get to tonight. But you are listening to Liberty on Brad on the My View Matters Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Pounding away.
We saw them turn, but don't sleep. Take breath, we take, make those teeth. Like causes without.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. Welcome back to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. I'm your host, Ken Mulman. If you'd like to call in tonight, by the way, you can call in at 858-683-1326. That's area code 858-683-1326. Oh, let's see here. I had a handful of other miscellaneous things I wanted to get to, but I'm going to skip over some of them here. One of the things I found interesting, one of the stories I found interesting, was that police are, some of them, are refusing to enforce their new gun laws. And basically there's a letter signed as of Friday, 250 law enforcement officers had signed an open letter stating that they would not enforce the new anti-gun and magazine laws, which they consider to be a violation of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. It's interesting because some of the folks on the liberty side oftentimes don't necessarily trust the police, and this is another example of there are good cops out there, folks. They recognize that what Connecticut's doing is unconstitutional, that limiting people, requiring registration, and now being real jerks about people who didn't get in time is not going to stand in court, and they're not going to stand for it. They're not going to continue or rather engage in what they believe to be unconstitutional behavior. So there are good cops out there. And I just thought that was an interesting story because the gun control, obviously, we don't have to worry about that here in Kentucky, at least not right now. Of all the states that would ever get gun control, I'm pretty sure we'd be the last. But the point is that there are good cops out there, and we care about guns here too. And I'm sure if that ever happened in Kentucky, that actually you'd probably have even even more police that would sign on. Heck, I mean, we had the whole thing where the sheriffs were signing on to say that they would not. I mean, it was just proactively before anything had occurred. There were a bunch of sheriffs that signed on to a letter that said they would not enforce any unconstitutional gun laws in Kentucky. So I think that that's a good thing. Speaking of that kind of stuff, too, the State House has a bill to limit the use of drones in Kentucky. And I've looked over this bill. I've worked with some of the people that have worked with Diane St. Ange on this bill. I have not worked with Representative St. Ange directly on this. I do know her personally, but I haven't really worked with her on any legislation to date. But I like what they're doing here, and I think that it's a good thing. Anything we can do to limit the use of drones against the American public is a good thing. Certainly, there are certain agencies that would love to be flying drones everywhere. These are the same people that would like to have cameras and red light cameras and all the cameras being able to monitor everyone like some sort of crazy Big Brother scenario. And make no mistake, whether for good or bad intentions, there are people in law enforcement today that believe that that would be a useful tool to prevent crime, to catch criminals. Yes, that's true, but there's lots of things you can do that would be effective at stopping crime. The question is, are they constitutional? Are they there's a balance between safety and liberty. And the problem is that as a society, we've been moving the wrong way on this. We've been moving more towards the safety and willing to just give up liberties for safety. And I worry about this because if you look at all the rights we've lost, I think the only one that I haven't seen violated yet is the Third Amendment, housing soldiers in homes. And that's only because they don't have to. They just build their own facilities now with our money. But I guess the point is that we need to be applauding Representative St. Ange for putting this bill forward. She's working. I see Kate Miller here with the ACLU, who I've also met, is very dedicated to liberty. I see she's involved and is applauding this law as well. And I think that I'm hoping that this is a good first step direction. I have no issue with drones being used for military purposes over military bases. I have a big problem with drones being used to fly around and randomly snoop on people. These things have the FLIR cameras. They can see infrared through buildings. They can see all kinds of things. And I've seen the videos. We saw that stuff out of Iraq during the early days of the Iraq War, where the soldiers were using the FLIR cameras to spy on people engaging in adult activities. It's not cool, and we don't want that here. We don't want to have a government able to figure out what we're doing and why we're doing and how we're doing and all that stuff. We want a government that simply holds people accountable if they violate the rights of someone else. But you can't get into – I assume some of our audience has seen the movie Minority Report. We don't want to get into the mode of preemptively stopping crime, because preemptively stopping crime requires a significant violation of rights. And it takes into account or takes away individual choice. They start profiling people and saying, well, 87% of people who do X, Y, and Z end up knocking off a liquor store. So we're going to go and preemptively stop this guy from knocking off a liquor store. Well, what about the 13% of people who are actually innocent that just happened to do X, Y, and Z and had no intention of knocking off a liquor store? Aren't we supposed to be innocent until proven guilty? And that's, I think, the core of all of this, is that we're violating so many of our core principles for this alleged safety. And the reality is, you can't have that safety. It's not possible to have that safety. There aren't enough government employees. You would literally have to have a policeman follow you around to provide total safety. And even then, something crazy could happen. There is no true safety. And criminal justice cannot act proactively in an efficient manner that doesn't violate our rights. And that's really, really critical to understand. And if we need to talk about that in a later show, we can. But I want to move on because we do have a handful of interesting things spinning up here in Kentucky. This past week, we heard the announcement from Hal Heiner, former candidate for Louisville mayor, has announced for governor officially, and he is paired up with Casey Crosby, who ran for, and tying back to the Red Star thing, was the person that was one of the three people in the race for state treasurer in 2011, I being one of them as well, and the current treasurer being the third, and he was an incumbent. So Heiner and Crosby are a ticket now, and basically there's a poll that was done. Poll says that Comer currently leads in the race 42% to 14%, Comer versus Heiner. And they did not include Kathy Bailey, who apparently is also eyeing the race but hasn't made too strong a move. There was talk that Kathy Bailey was going to get in 4 or 3 years ago, and she did not. So they didn't include her in this poll. But basically, Heiner is strong in Louisville, and that's expected because he's from Louisville. But Comer leads Heiner pretty much everywhere else. Let's see here. Oh, okay. So Southeast Kentucky, there's no numbers there. Okay. I expect Heiner to do well in Louisville. He's working on getting Eastern Kentucky, is best I've heard. But Comer's just got a commanding lead in Lexington and in Western Kentucky. And I'm pretty sure when it comes to it, Comer will have a strong lead in Northern Kentucky, being from up here, knowing people up here. I think really it's just an issue that Comer isn't as well known in Northern Kentucky, and Heiner is definitely not known. So it's probably that there's just a big question mark in general up here. But, you know, the 2015 races have already started, and we're not even through 2014. And I think that's kind of typical, right? I mean, it's not really a surprise to me that we're already gearing up for those big statewide races in 2015. And before you ask, no, I have no intention of running statewide in 2015. Thanks anyway. But speaking of statewide races, in Ohio, the Libertarian Party of Ohio had filed 5 candidates for office. 3 of them were disqualified immediately, claiming that they did not turn in enough signatures to be placed onto the ballot. The 2 that did qualify, there was a challenge immediately filed. Now, this challenge is ostensibly from another Libertarian because in Ohio, Libertarians have ballot access. And so they have the same process as Democrats and Republicans, and this is going into the primary. And there is a challenge being made by a Libertarian, registered Libertarian, that the 2 Libertarians on the ballot are not legitimate. And so that challenge has been raised on Friday, I think, or maybe it was late Thursday. They got the ruling back that they were going to knock the 2 Libertarian candidates off the ballot, which would effectively entirely wipe out the Libertarian choices in 2014 at a statewide level in Ohio. What's interesting about that is that in an interview that someone did, the Ohio Republican Party chairman admits that, oh, yeah, we're helping in that law. You know, he calls it our suit, speaking Republican suit, even though he doesn't have the legal standing to be involved. There, to my understanding, are 3 lawyers involved in the process, very high-paid lawyers, one that an individual person, and they've done the research on the person that's made the complaint, would not be able to afford. And so it's definitely going to be interesting. I think what this is indicative of is that more and more people in general are clamoring that the D's and the R's don't represent them anymore. And if I remember right, there was a poll that a whopping 60% of Americans are calling for a new party, a third party. And, of course, the Libertarian Party very much wants to be that party. And they are America's third largest party. They're the third largest party in Ohio and here in Kentucky. And I think what you're seeing is that the D's and the R's, the establishment parties, are struggling maintain their hammer lock on the electoral process. If you look at the results that Libertarian independents have been gaining and earning over the past few years, independent Libertarians are doing a whole lot better than they ever have. Sarvis in Virginia last year, got a very sizable chunk of the vote. And while Republicans whined because they lost and claimed that all those votes should have belonged to them, the exit polling said the opposite. Of the people who came to vote for the Libertarian candidate, half of them wouldn't have otherwise voted. And of the rest, the other half, to margin, they would have voted Democrat instead rather than Republican instead. So essentially, libertarians are picking up votes across the spectrum. Independents pick up votes across the spectrum. Republicans assume that those votes belong to them because they run campaigns of, well, that guy's evil, so you need to vote for me. They don't run a positive campaign. They run a negative campaign, a campaign that is based on that guy's horrible, so you need to vote for me to stop them. And that seems to be their general playbook, their platform. And that's not a platform that is pushing for solutions. It's not a platform that's putting forth answers. It's not a platform that is inspiring to people. And so as independents and libertarians do better, they're doing better because they're putting forth positive solutions. They're pointing out the corruption of the system. They're saying, I will be a better candidate. And the only thing really holding libertarians and independents back at this point is fear from the regular voting public. The fear, the lesser of two evils game. And if we can get over that lesser of two evils hump, you will see a radical shift in politics in this country away from the D's and the R's, both. They will swing away from the D's and the R's, and they will become a real force in politics. And that's what we want. We want alternate voices. We want people with solutions to step forward and present those solutions. I mean, in the past, as a libertarian, I ran, mentioned this again, in 2011, and I ran on the platform of getting rid of the state treasurer's office because the state treasurer in Kentucky is extraordinarily weak. It doesn't do anything. And that's okay. There is a check and balance there, but it can be achieved without the price tag. My understanding is that the treasurer's office has a $3.1 million per year budget. I believe that that check and balance can be achieved without spending $3.1 million per year. And I think that it can be done within the framework of other agencies that already exist in the state. You give the reporting requirements to the auditor, whose job it is to audit. You give the check writing to the governor, who is already writing checks and depositing money. Basically, they're the middleman in the whole thing anyway. So make them not the middleman, make them the last step. And then you give the lost property office to the Secretary of State, because most of that lost property comes from businesses, and businesses already deal with the Secretary of State's office. It's pretty straightforward. It's not a complicated plan. You know, I didn't win. I got outspent something like 300 or 200 to 1. I can't remember now. I got it way outspent. But the message resonated, and it brought the issue back to light. And I'm very hopeful that these and ours, and it looks like Democrats and Republicans are going to come together and put this to the voters. And if they do, I want to encourage you strongly to vote for it, because there is, it's not a silver bullet, and everybody always tries to criticize it. Well, that's not going to solve our problems. Well, no. There is no one problem. There's not one thing that solves all our problems. I mean, there is no quick fix in any of this, especially in Kentucky. We've got such a mix of issues. But I can tell you that there are certain things we can do to make things better. Industrial hemp, that was one of those things. That's a great thing. It's not going to save every family farm in Kentucky, but it will save some. And I think that's great. It gives people the opportunity to try. They have... It's funny, because at the same time we're deregulating hemp and Colorado, they've deregulated marijuana full blown. In fact, I've got a story here about how the governor is actually going to release the people who are just locked up on straight up marijuana offenders. People that are just in jail for marijuana, they're just going to let them go, which I think is great. It's funny to me, I didn't realize, but in the U.S., if you're convicted of a crime and then that crime is no longer considered a crime, you're still convicted and you still do your time unless the governor pardons you, which I think is terrible. It seems like if you repeal a law and what you were convicted of is no longer illegal, then it's rather punitive to keep you in jail for something that's no longer illegal. But, and that whole Colorado thing, that's going great. Apparently they've got tax revenue – like crazy coming off of this thing, and it's working out well. There's been no evidence of any real negative social harm, not yet anyway, and we'll continue to watch that. I'm cautiously optimistic that that's going to turn out well. You know, all the while, here in Kentucky, there's a medical marijuana bill being pushed. We talked to Ginny about that last week. Ginny, one of the things she pointed out was that there's a new opiate-based drug that's coming out for pain relief that everybody's just freaking out over because it's so powerful. And basically, that I've got the story up here. The idea is that this stuff is very, very powerful. And one accidental dose can kill you. So I don't understand why we would ever send anyone home with something that dangerous. Why would anyone would ever get a prescription to be able to go home with that? But the FDA approved it, and I guess it'll happen. Seems to me something that dangerous probably should be, I mean, as an individual, if something's that dangerous, I'm going to want to be in a hospital. If I actually need it, I'm going to want to be in a hospital in case something is horribly wrong. I don't know. Our priorities are so screwy sometimes. But getting back to hemp and all that stuff, I think the hemp thing is really going to help Kentucky farmers. And again, it's not every farmer and it's not everything. It's one little piece. But then there are other little nonsensical things that are going on that also hurt our farmers. So, for instance, growing up, my parents always had a decent-sized garden because they had land, and so they'd grow food. And we would often, actually almost always, use the water from the creek in the backyard to water those plants. And that would make them grow. And then we'd also use compost and whatever else, right, grass clippings and other vegetation turned to compost to fertilize. Well, the FDA is now creating regulations that would basically curtail the use of homemade fertilizer and irrigating from creeks, which is what we grew up doing. And the funniest part of all of that is that the whole EPA thing with trying to make it so creeks are cleaner than they ever were when I was growing up, it's like, wait a second, so the water's cleaner than it's ever, well, it has been in my lifetime, but now we're not allowed to use it to water plants that we want to grow in our backyard, huh? The levels of bureaucracy and regulation are just out of control. It's crazy, and I don't get it. I just don't get why we can't leave people to make their own decisions, to let individuals. I mean, you know what you're going to get when you buy stuff from a farm and it's labeled organic. I mean, you there are certain things you expect, and you know what? If they're committing fraud, if it's not organic, if they're using chemicals and all that, well, that's fraud, and I'm against that. But if it's a creek in the backyard watering some vegetables, I mean, really, you're going to regulate that? I mean, really? Really? Oh, we're almost out of time, and I have so much stuff about Obamacare. It's hilarious. I definitely want to get to this one. So Illinois has partnered with The Onion to help push Obamacare enrollment. I kid you not. This couldn't even be an Onion headline. I mean, The Onion, which is probably one of the oldest and probably the best fake news websites out there, satirical news websites out there, has partnered with the state-based exchange in Illinois to advertise for Obamacare on their website. And also to do a special custom news section. Of all the things, The Onion getting tapped to do this. And, of course, one of the best things, then, is going back and looking. This is an older article on The Onion from January of 1997. The headline is, World Death Rate Holding Steady at 100%. And I think that's entertainingly appropriate, that the reality is we're all going to die someday. There's nothing we can do to stop it. And the whole Obamacare thing is just funny. I don't know. And teaming up with The Onion, I mean, it's such a bad headline to have. Why would you even ever think to do that? I just don't know. And I've got more on Obamacare. We're running out of time for tonight, folks, and I apologize. But there's one quick thing here. A restaurant is actually starting to put on their receipts an Obamacare surcharge. And it's got all kinds of people up in arms because they're showing the cost of Obamacare to the end consumer. And this is something that the telephone companies do when they increase the communication charge, the tax, to make it so everything was wired up everywhere. They did the exact same thing, and it made the government howl and scream that, oh, how dare you show your customers that we're charging them $10 per line for a tax. Why don't you take the blame for that? Yeah, whatever. Folks, we're out of time. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week to another edition of Liberty Unbridled, and tune into the other shows on the network Monday through Thursday. Other than that, take care, folks. We'll see you next week.